Hello, this is Greg, and I'll be reading the Vermilion County News for Tuesday, January 21st, 2020. And today, on the front page of the commercial news, we will start with a story entitled Project Uplift Offers Help. Library event provides resources for homeless. And this is by Jennifer Bailey. Danville. Homelessness in the area has been in the news recently after a fire under the Memorial Bridge. A homeless encampment last week was the source of a fire under the bridge, disrupting traffic, according to police. The Danville Public Library started Project Uplift 4 years ago to help meet homeless persons' needs in the community. This year's resource event will be from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Friday in the first floor meeting room, just inside the front door at the Danville Public Library at 219 North Vermilion Street. Project Uplift is designed to connect homeless or home insecure persons and families and those who love them with information and resources within the Danville community. We have around 20 organizations this year, said Jessica Augustson, Community Engagement Librarian. Augustson said they will provide gift bags to the first 100 people. There also will again be a meal provided by Danville Area Community College's Culinary Department. There will be door prizes. Guest speakers will be Melissa Courtwright with Chris Healthy Aging Center, the Dwelling Places Donna Edgington, and Thomas Goyen with the Veterans Affairs Illiana Healthcare System. There also will be a musical presentation by library staff. Augustin said the library can put a focus on specific topics, such as homelessness. She said it's unfortunately a problem that persists. She said they and other community organizations want to continue to help address it and help people find the resources they need. For example, the Dwelling Place of Vermilion County is expected to open its day center in the basement of First Presbyterian Church at 100 North Franklin Street in the next few weeks. The day center will provide shower and laundry facilities and other services. Augustson said the library also is helping connect homeless persons to important resources like the library itself. We do offer library cards for displaced persons, she said. Those living in a shelter or elsewhere can use their location as their home address. They can provide a letterhead from that location to show that place will take responsibility for lost or missing items, she said. Augustson added that Project Uplift may have some of the same organizations year after year in attendance, but each organization may have different resources that they might not have had the year before. They could have different programs and new services. And our next story, also from the front page of the commercial news, is entitled Trade Deals Boost Illinois Farmers. And this is by Ben Orner from Capital News, Illinois. Springfield. Illinois farmers will get a much-needed lift from two international trade agreements approved by the federal government last week, but experts are uncertain if their situations will improve in the long term. After exchanging hundreds of billions of dollars of tariffs for more than a year, the U.S. and Chinese governments agreed Wednesday to the first part of a trade deal. On Thursday, Congress passed the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement, better known as USMCA, sending it to President Donald Trump to sign. The average Illinoisan will likely not much be affected by the deals, experts say. Instead, the largest beneficiaries will be corn and soybean farmers who have been caught in President Trump's trade conflicts with China and Mexico since 2018. Illinois farmers have been especially hurt by China's retaliatory tariffs in the ongoing U.S.-China trade war, forcing the federal government to issue $28 billion in aid nationwide. Wednesday's trade agreement with China, however, is more of a ceasefire than a peace agreement, said Jonathan Kappes, director of the Gardner Agriculture Policy Program at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Really, what it does is kind of stop the damage that was initiated with this tariff conflict that the president started, he said. The deal should play out in two phases. Phase one, which began Wednesday, requires China to purchase $200 billion in U.S. goods over the next 2 years, including $32 billion of agricultural products. Chief among them are soybeans and pork, in which Illinois ranks first and fourth, respectively, in U.S. production. American soybean exports to China dropped 75% between 2017 and 2018 as China bought soybeans from other countries while exchanging tariffs with the U.S. President Trump, however, said he will not lift America's $360 billion of tariffs on Chinese goods until phase two is negotiated and implemented. We see this as a sign of brighter days to come, Illinois Soybean Growers President Doug Schroeder said in a statement. However, he added, a long-awaited win for the soybean industry will come when the soybean tariffs are fully rescinded. Unfortunately, that could be a while, said Todd Hubbs, a professor of agriculture economics at UIUC. It doesn't sound like phase two is going to get done anytime soon, Hubbs said, because U.S. leadership could change after November's presidential election. I don't think there's any desire on either side right now to ruin the deal, but I don't see it happening before the election, he said. Carson Varner, a professor of international business at Illinois State University, who also owns soybean land, says farmers like him are willing to suffer in only the short term. We'd much rather make our money selling soybeans than receiving tariff aid, he said. Varner is hopeful, though, that China and the U.S. can strike a deal. He predicts phase two will also allow Illinois to export more pork and agriculture equipment. Trump knows how to negotiate, Varner said. I think he told the Chinese he's willing to walk away from a bad deal, and so I am optimistic that this thing is going to move forward. Despite President Trump calling the USMCA one of the biggest trade bills ever made, not much has actually changed from its beginnings as the Clinton-era North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA, Kappes said. We're not talking about major reform of the trade agreement, Kappes said. If anything, the president has his trade agreement, so we can be assured, at least for his time in office, that maybe he won't threaten these trading partners again. The agreement mostly reinforces trade the U.S. already does with Canada and Mexico, especially corn, of which Mexico is America's top buyer, and Illinois is America's second biggest producer. Every step towards USMCA passage is cause for celebration, Illinois Corn Growers Association President Bill Lee said in a statement. The USMCA also increases U.S. dairy exports to Canada, but that will impact more dairy-heavy states like Wisconsin. Both U.S. senators from Illinois, Democrats Dick Durbin and Tammy Duckworth, voted for the bill. In statements, Durbin applauded its bipartisan support, while Duckworth said it works for farmers and manufacturers and features enforceable labor standards to support American workers. Duckworth added, however, the deal is not perfect because it does not tackle climate change. But Varner argues enforcing U.S. environmental standards on Mexico is demanding too much. Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, he said. One negative for regular Illinoisans is that the USMCA could increase the prices of new cars, because it ups the percentage of North American auto parts that vehicles must have to avoid tariffs. because companies often pass on increased production costs and losses from tariffs to consumers, the average American could see car prices increase between $470 and $2,200, according to the Center for Automotive Research. Varner argues, however, the USMCA's requirements regarding auto parts and higher wage standards are designed to spur investment in the U.S. and increase domestic manufacturing. I think it would cost a lot more if we abandon these deals, he said. President Trump is expected to sign the USMCA next week. Mexico approved it last year, while Canada is expected to approve it later this year to officially make it binding. And next we have a staff report from the Commercial News. This is entitled, Library Starts Longer Loan Periods. Danville. Danville Public Library now offers longer loan periods on its materials. Fiction and nonfiction just added to the collection, loans out for 2 weeks instead of one. Loan periods for all other fiction and nonfiction increase from 2 weeks to 4 weeks, according to a release from the library. Entertainment DVDs and Blu-rays loan out for 1 week instead of 2 days. Nonfiction DVDs and TV series loan out for 2 weeks. Youth services materials loan out for 4 weeks, with the exception of tablets, which continue to loan out for 1 week. Most materials will continue to renew up to 3 times, unless there is a hold on the item. Patrons can track due dates by signing into their account online or by contacting the circulation desk. Signing up for a library card is easier as well. Danville residents can apply for a card using a government-issued photo ID if the applicant's current address is on the card. And now we'll turn to the obituaries for Tuesday, January 21st, 2020. And the first one that we have today is for Philip D. Leisch. Philip, or Phil, Dean Leisch, 84, of Danville, Illinois, passed away peacefully January 19th, 2020, at North Logan Healthcare Center in Danville. A graveside service will be at 11 a.m. on Wednesday, January 22nd, in Sunset Memorial Park at 3901 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Officiating will be Pastor Dale Deneal. Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville has been entrusted with arrangements. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made in Philip's name to the Celebrate Recovery Program at Second Church of Christ, 3350 East Voorhees Street, Danville, Illinois, 61834. Sally Johnson. Sally A. Johnson, 102, formerly of Westville and Danville, passed away at 5:11 a.m. Saturday, January 18, 2020, at Garden View Manor Nursing Home in Danville. Graveside rites will be at 2 p.m. Wednesday at the Lithuanian National Cemetery in Westville. Robison Chapel in Catlin is handling the arrangements. Dixie Hackler. Dixie Myers Hackler, 80, of St. Joseph, passed away at 2:18 p.m. Friday, January 17, 2020, at her home with tears of sadness and joy. Services will be held Saturday, January 25, 2020, at the St. Joseph United Methodist Church in St. Joseph. Visitation will be from 9:30 a.m. to noon, with the service and luncheon immediately following. A family graveside service will be held at a later time. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations in Dixie's name can be made to the St. Joseph United Methodist Church, 205 North 3rd Street, St. Joseph. Funeral arrangements are being handled by Freeze Funeral Home of St. Joseph. Terry Jean Vaughan. Terry Jean Vaughan, formerly Gailey, of Danville, 66, passed away after a prolonged illness on Saturday, January 18, 2020, at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville. Memorial visitation will be from 1 to 3 p.m. Thursday, January 23rd, at Kruger Cone Pape Funeral Home at 10 East William Street in Danville. James Snoddy. James Ernest Snoddy, 87, passed away on Sunday, January 19, 2020, at Visiting Nurses Hospice in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Visitation for Jim Snoddy will be at 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Wednesday, January 22nd, at Shelby Funeral Home, 622 3rd Street, Covington, Indiana, with a private family graveside service later. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that you consider a charitable gift to Howard County Meals on Wheels, P.O. Box 6296, Kokomo, Indiana 46904, or the Fort Wayne Civic Theater at 303 East Main, Fort Wayne, Indiana 46802. Ruth Ann Earle. Ruth Ann Earle, 75, of Danville, died at 7:02 p.m. Saturday, January 18, 2020, at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Rortvedt Funeral Services, 3 South Hodge Street in Tilton. Philip Fuller. Philip Fuller, 74, of Danville, died at 12:10 a.m. Sunday, January 19, 2020, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Kruger Cone Pape Funeral Home and Crematory at 10 East William Street in Danville. And that's the end of the obituaries for today. We're going to turn now to the News Gazette for today's column on Rediscover Danville. And today's Rediscover Danville article is entitled Congratulations to Irving Azoff. And this is by Carol Nichols. Irving L. Azoff was born in Danville, Illinois on December 12, 1947, to Lois S. and Edith B. Azoff. His father was, for many years, a pharmacist at the prescription shop in Danville. His grandparents, Israel and Sophie, were Russian Jewish immigrants who came to Danville in 1911. Through the years, the family lived in several Danville homes, including 511 and a half South Street, 321 Harmon, 923 Giddings, 407 West Harrison, 1113 North Grant, 309 Fletcher Drive, and 278 Ridgeview. While at Northridge Junior High, Irving's friends started a band called Shades of Blue. Irving couldn't sing or play an instrument, so he offered to manage the group and let them play in his family's garage. Friends remember how the neighborhood kids would gather and sit in the driveway to listen to the music. In an interview, band member Tim Frazier recalled the group winning the Eastern Illinois Fair Battle of the Bands, but says they later found out Irving had paid off the judges. The group won $400 each in prize money and recorded 2 45 RPM singles. Looking back on the beginning of his career, Irving once said he knew he belonged in the music business when he sold 900 tickets to a teen dance at the VFW Hall in Danville. By the time Irving was a junior at Danville High School, he was representing other groups too, and jousting with local unions over multiple bands. In 1966, he graduated from Danville High School and began college life at the University of Illinois in Urbana, majoring in chemistry and mathematics, where he served as the social chairman for Alpha Epsilon Pi fraternity. Irving continued his passion for booking bands, joining Bob Nutt in Blytham Limited, a talent agency with offices behind the Red Lion Bar on campus. They booked local talent, such as REO Speedwagon, Blue, The Esquires, and The Finchley Boys with George Gaber and singer Dan Fogelberg. During his career, he has managed Steely Dan, Boz Scaggs, Stevie Nicks, Heart, Jackson Browne, and the Eagles, among many others. He started Frontline Management in the mid-1970s, was the head of MCA and Giant Records, CEO of Ticketmaster, chairman of Live Nation Entertainment, and chairman and CEO of Azoff MSG Entertainment. His height and his temperament have earned him titles such as The Poison Dwarf, and a rumor persists that Randy Newman's song Short People was written with him in mind. But his talent and fierce devotion to his profession and his clients through the years have earned him other titles. In 2012, he was recognized by Billboard magazine as the most powerful person in the music industry. He was the recipient of the Recording Academy President's Merit Award at the 2016 Pre-Grammy Gala, and on May 2, 2020, he will be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, along with Whitney Houston, the Doobie Brothers, the Notorious B.I.G., Nine Inch Nails, T-Rex, and Depeche Mode. Danville congratulates native son Irving Azoff on yet another well-deserved recognition of his talents. And now from the sports section of the commercial news, we have an article entitled Taking Care of Business, Meidel Leads BHRA Past Westville in County Tournament. This is by Chad Dare. Danville. Playing clean, unselfish basketball is the game plan for the Bismarck-Henning-Rossville-Alvin girls basketball team. In two Vermilion County tournament victories, the Blue Devils have been unselfish with 25 assists on 43 baskets, but on Monday night, they had a few issues with playing clean, turning the ball over 14 times in a 47-25 triumph over the Westville Tigers. "We just want to play an all-around solid game each time we step on the court," said Bismarck Henning Rossville Alvin senior Emily Meidel, who had a game-high 22 points and 9 rebounds in the win over Westville. "We have to play as a team if we want to get these wins and make it to the championship game." BizHen Rossal coach Mike Stevens acknowledged that Monday's game wasn't quite as good as Saturday's. "I thought we played really clean on Saturday, but we didn't play a clean game at all tonight," he said. "We will won on that in practice today." When asked if he thought it was a good wake-up call for his team, Stevens had a very simple answer. "I'm not a mind reader," he said. "I guess we will have to wait until Wednesday to find out." But he did feel pretty good that Rossal is still a diverse offensive attack with 6 different players picking up assists in both victories. "Bismarck moves the ball really well," said Westville coach Jay Katovich. "They have a couple of strong players that have really good basketball skills, and that helps their team tremendously." But their key player, Meidel, still had most of their points tonight. Joining Meidel in double digits was sophomore Sophia Rome, who finished with 14 points to go along with 7 rebounds, and she had 5 of her team's 14 steals in the contest. "Rome had a really solid game at both ends of the floor," Stevens said. On the other side, freshman Lydia Gonzer had a big game off the bench for the Tigers, who fell to 4-19 with the loss. Gonzer had a team-high 9 points to go along with 2 assists and 5 steals. Lydia is coming on strong, and she is doing a lot of things well for us, Katovich said. She is moving up, and we are improving. Right now, we are playing quarter by quarter. It's a process to get things better. While Bismarck Henning Rossville Alvin plays Salt Fork at 8 p.m. on Wednesday for the Pool B Championship, Westville will play Georgetown Ridge Farm in the 5 p.m. game, with the winner advancing to the fifth place contest on Friday. And now we'll turn to Dear Annie with a column that's entitled, If You Give a Gift Expecting Something in Return, It's No Gift. Dear Annie, people who complain about giving gifts and not getting one in return should remember an old saying, if you are giving something and expecting something in return, then it is not giving, it is business. Signed, Good Old Saying. Dear Good Old Saying, may our readers find the pleasure in giving to others without expecting something in return. That good feeling in and of itself is a gift. Dear Annie, a writer asked about giving a gift to someone who has everything. We think of gift giving as expensive and impressive. It's not. The best gift can be some small trinket that brings back a happy memory that you shared with a person or persons. We spent one Christmas on a small foreign island. The only thing open on Christmas Eve was a small 7-Eleven store. We made the spending limit $5. It's hard to find anything for that amount, even in a 7-Eleven. One gift was a small set of Christmas tree lights. Back at the motel, my wife broke off a small branch and stuffed it in a coffee can. We lit it up. It looked just like the Christmas tree in the Peanuts comic strip. We had a great Christmas and many laughs over the years about our little tree. My greatest gift was the last photo of my wife. Although she was extremely sick, she sat up and smiled. It now sits on my desk, and I look at it every day and smile. It's a great way to start a day. Signed, Greatest Gift. Dear Greatest Gift, I am very sorry about the loss of your wife. What a touching and beautiful way to honor and remember her. It sounds like you had a true love with a true artist, making a Christmas tree out of a coffee can. I love it. Thank you for sharing your letter. I hope that it inspires others to cherish the memories they make with their loved ones while they are here on Earth. Dear Annie, can you stand one more letter about guests helping with the cleanup after a meal? I do appreciate the offer of assistance, but I have my own efficient method for cleaning up after a meal in my small kitchen. Guests who insist on helping by clearing the table and putting things wherever there's a bare spot on the counter only complicate and prolong the process. I have one friend who totally gets my system, and I have no problem with her jumping in, but everyone else makes it more chaotic. So, dear guests, your sincere offers to help will always be appropriate and appreciated, but please be gracious enough to respect your host's response if they ask you to relax and let them handle it. Signed, Kitchen Cleanup. Dear Kitchen Cleanup, you sound like a great host. All that your guests have to do is to enjoy themselves and relax. I'm glad that you acknowledged and appreciated their offer to help, but you are clear that you do not need their help and just want them to relax. What a lovely evening. And finally, briefly from the community briefs. In Danville, there's an announcement that the Lions are to meet. Brooke Kachewski, prevention educator for the Resource Center, will speak at noon on Thursday to the Danville Lions Club in Spanky's Banquet Hall at 409 East Main Street. And unfortunately, that takes us to the end of our time for today, Tuesday, January 21st, 2020. And this has been the Vermilion County News. Again, my name is Greg, and as always, it's been a pleasure to read for you today. I hope you have a wonderful day. Take care.